Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. He's Lance Meadow. I am John Schmuck with you for the next 1 hour to talk some Giants football. We're getting ready for the Giants and the Bills coming your way on Sunday from Buffalo. We'll be joined by Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com at 12:45. We talked to him earlier in the offseason, Lance, to preview the Bills this season. Now he will give us the update on what's going on with them and the Bills, Lance, and we'll start there. Are coming in to this game with a big division victory over the Miami Dolphins. I watched that first half, or rewatched it, the first half of the game this morning. And, boy, the Dolphins, I was less impressed with the Dolphins than I was more impressed with what the Bills did in that game.
Well, they constantly brought pressure towards Ryan Tannehill. I think that's what jumped out about that contest. And they were very opportunistic. Preston Brown, their middle linebacker in that game, John, had a pair of interceptions, one in which he returned for a touchdown. They're plus five in terms of turnover differential on the season. This is an aggressive defense, and that shouldn't surprise anybody because it's what Rex Ryan has preached ever since he was with the Jets and even with Baltimore. I mean, that's that aggressive approach that he has on defense.
Yeah, and I haven't watched the second half yet, but in the first half, I mean, I counted at the times he sent more than four or five guys was very few. So they actually did a lot of four-man pressure in that first half. They usually have three down linemen, one stand-up rusher on any given play. They did not blitz a ton. Now, they had one play where they brought the safety. That forced one of the interceptions. Another play went right into the hands of Jarvis Landry, popped off of his chest. That turned into an interception. And another play was a deflection at the line of scrimmage. That turned into an interception. So at least in the first half, there were some strange turnovers in that game. And when you take a look at the Bills on defense, Lance, Mario Williams has not been super productive so far. You look at their defensive ranking, they're actually 29th in the league right now, which is very, very poor in terms of total yards. Now, they're in the middle league in terms of points, 14th in terms of points. I think they have six sacks on the season, which is tied for 11th or 13th, somewhere in the middle of the league. So their defensive numbers, I think, got skewed a lot by that second game they played against New England when Tom Brady really marched up and down the field on them.
Well, the Patriots had over 500 total yards of offense. Tom Brady alone nearly threw for 500 yards. I think you hit it right on the nose. I think you have to put this Buffalo Bills defense in perspective, and you can't get so caught up in the numbers because you're right, that New England game really threw everything out of whack. But if you take into consideration what they did against Indianapolis and then what they did against Miami, I think that's a better tell of what this defense can accomplish. Now, you mentioned they didn't bring five or six guys constantly towards Ryan Tannehill, but that means, John, that they're so effective with their front four getting pressure just alone with that front.
Well, absolutely, and I bet you in the second half, and I started to see this on the Dolphins' final two-minute drill of that first half. I was just watching it before the show started, and they started to blitz a lot more once they knew the Dolphins were going to pass the football. I think they were playing much more straight up and honest when they knew the run was a threat. And I did watch a good portion of the fourth quarter of that game live on Sunday, and they did blitz a lot more in the second half. So I think a big key here for the Giants is you don't want to get behind this team. Yeah. Because once you get behind and you become a one-dimensional offense, that's what someone like Rex Ryan absolutely loves, because that's when he can get very creative with his blitzes, get very creative with his pressure. He did a lot of zone blitzes in that two-minute drill situation. They dropped a couple linemen, brought a corner off the edge. That actually forced that interception return for a touchdown right near the end of the half. Then you had a safety blitz, which forced another turnover, as I mentioned earlier. So I think it's important for the Giants to get a lead in this game, or at least not get behind and be turned into a one-dimensional team, which a defense like the Bills can feast on.
Well, then on top of that, they have Carlos Williams, who is their closer in terms of the running back. If you noticed against Miami, not only did the defense put the offense in a comfort zone, like you said, got out to an early lead, but then they were able to pound the football in the second half, and they took the game out of Tyrod Taylor's hands. They said, hey, you know, we don't need to air it out too much. Just milk the clock, work it on the ground with Carlos Williams, and they were very effective in terms of sealing that victory with their ground attack. And right now it doesn't appear as if LeSean McCoy is going to play because of that hamstring injury. We'll hear more from Chris Brown a little bit later on. So Williams is probably going to be the workhorse, the rookie back out of Florida State who's been very effective in the first three games. He's actually outproduced LeSean McCoy, not in terms of carries, but in terms of yardage per carry as well as total yards. So I don't necessarily think it's a downgrade if LeSean McCoy doesn't play come this weekend.
No, and Williams has frankly been a better runner this year. You mentioned, I think he's averaging almost 6 or 7 yards per carry, or is it even 8? I'm not sure. It's whatever it is, it's very, very high. I'm waiting for his stats to load here on my computer. But LeSean McCoy is at 3.4 yards per carry, so he's actually struggled. I watched, again, in that first half against Miami, they tried to run the ball to LeSean McCoy, and he was getting hit in the backfield a lot. The Bills' offensive line did not do a very good job blocking for him. I felt like they were much more comfortable running the types of plays you would with Carlos Williams, which is a lot of downhill stuff, a lot of straight-ahead stuff, more of a one-cut power speed back than McCoy, who's going to dance and try to make
shifty
that big play. And, you know, we'll see if McCoy plays with the hamstring. It's something he's really battled since the summer, and the Bills at this point are probably wise, since it's lingered so much, to let him rest and get it healthy so he's right the rest of the year. He doesn't have one run. This is LeSean McCoy now. He doesn't have one run of 20 or more yards yet this season. And I think that shows you that that hamstring probably is a factor.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's probably the most telling circumstance right now as to why he's not gaining those big play yardage. And he's not even doing it in terms of the receiving game, John.
Yeah.
Because LeSean McCoy is capable of also getting a 20-yard play on a short 5-yard pass. The hamstring has certainly taken away from his production. That's why Carlos Williams has been featured more and more over the first three games. But I think that the Bills' offense is much more balanced than what we've seen in previous years, John. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Tyrod Taylor has done a nice job, despite the fact that he has very limited starting experience. He was Joe Flacco's backup in the early stages of his career. You know, he has a few interceptions. He had the game where he had 3 picks. But other than that, I think he's done a nice job protecting the football. He's also versatile because he can run out of the pocket and make throws. And between Carlos Williams and LeSean McCoy, to a certain degree, you know, they're also able to lean on the running game. This is actually the second straight week, John, that the Giants are going to go up against the number one rushing attack in the NFL. Washington came into Thursday night's game with the number one rushing attack in the league. Now Buffalo has that with over 150 yards per game. So this is going to be another key test for that Giants defensive line, which has been very consistent in stopping the run. These are the top two teams on the flip side in stopping the run. Buffalo's number one against the run, and the Giants are number two. Yet what makes absolutely no sense, and it's so bizarre in terms of the defensive rankings, with that being said, then the Giants are 32nd against the pass and the Bills are 31st against the pass. So we have these defenses on the opposite end of the spectrum, great against stopping the run, struggling in terms of stopping the pass.
Well, let's talk about the Bills quarterback then, Tyrod Taylor. You mentioned his history. I'm sure fans aren't very familiar with him. His numbers this year, frankly, are really, really, really good. He's completing 74% of his passes. He has 714 passing yards in his first three games, 7 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions. He also has 17 rushes for 96 yards, including a 31-yard run and a touchdown. He's played well. From what I saw against the Dolphins, he will primarily operate out of the shotgun. That seems to be where he's most comfortable. They ran, when he is under center, they ran a lot of play action early in that Dolphin game. They'll roll him out an awful lot off of that play action. And this is not the guy that they're going to sit back there and say, read the entire field, go through your 4 progressions, and you know, fire the ball downfield like he's Aaron Rodgers. They've simplified it for him a little bit. He's reading one half of the field. Like I mentioned, the play action pass, the rollouts, a lot of quick hitters out of that shotgun formation. So I'm not going to say that he's a gimmick quarterback, because he's not, because he actually was pretty accurate with a lot of his passes. I mentioned his completion percentage. He didn't miss a couple guys down the field, though. But he's a guy that requires, you know, timing, short, quick stuff, reading one side of the field. And I have a lot of faith that Steve Spagnuolo should be able to design a scheme that can hold him in place. Now, the running's another story. As we know, the Giants with their, you know, the zone read, and they will run some zone
Russell
read
Wilson
with Taylor and
you know,
LeSean McCoy. And remember, end of the game against Jacksonville Jaguars with Blake Bortles, one of those two plays were a killer. So That's what I think you have to look out for with Tyrod Taylor.
Well, you don't want him to get too comfortable in running out of the pocket because you're right. It doesn't matter whether he throws the ball. He'll still pick up 10 to 15 yards on the ground. So the Giants have to be full aware of that. And let's face it, compared to the other quarterbacks that they've gone up against this season, now some people would argue Tony Romo is somewhat of a mobile quarterback. I wouldn't necessarily put him in that same department.
He scrambles to throw. He doesn't run.
Correct.
There's a difference.
So therefore, this is the first test, John, in terms of a quarterback who is just as dangerous on the ground as he is through the air. And I think that they certainly need to be fully aware of that. The other thing to note with respect to Buffalo's offense, and you mentioned, John, you were alluding to the fact that, you know, they're not asking him to do too much, trying to get it out into open space to his weapons and so forth. A lot of missed tackles have opened opportunities for a lot of the Bills' receiving core and the tight ends. If you notice, Charles Clay was basically zigzagging in between his former teammates. So you have to be very well disciplined. You don't necessarily have to get to the quarterback all the time, you know, fill the voids, fill the gaps, but you need to make sure that when you have an offensive player in front of you, you bring that player down because they're very good. They're very shifty in terms of picking up yardage after the catch.
Well, let's talk about some of these weapons he's throwing the ball to, Lance. Great segue. First, Sammy Watkins, obviously a very high draft pick a year ago. The Bills made a big trade to trade up to get Sammy Watkins. He's battling with a calf injury right now. I would bet, based on the fact it is a calf injury and those things can be tricky, as Giant fans can attest to, a Victor Cruz, I'd be surprised if Sammy Watkins went this week. But quite frankly, Lance, he has not been this team's best receiver. In fact, there are two wide receivers and a tight end with more receptions than Sammy Watkins right now. And the number one guy is Percy Harvin. 16 catches, 192 yards, and a touchdown. Rex Ryan, obviously familiar with him from his time with the Jets last year, and they seem to have found a real good way to use him and make him effective.
Well, he had a 50-plus yard touchdown catch against the Indianapolis Colts in the opener of the season, and let's not forget, he's also their kickoff returner, John.
Yep.
So they haven't held him back on special teams. He's a dynamic player. We saw that with respect to his days with the Vikings, the Seahawks. The problem is he never stayed fully healthy throughout his career. Now he's healthy, so that certainly has opened up things for him in Buffalo, and I think part of the reason why Sammy Watkins hasn't been a guy that jumps off the pages, I don't think he's been fully healthy since the start of the season. You know, so that has held him back. Robert Woods, his numbers don't necessarily jump off the page. One guy I will tell you to watch out for Sunday, I thought he did a nice job filling in for Sammy Watkins, 7'11", Chris Hogan. He did a nice job stretching the field, and it's not necessarily a household name.
Jersey kid.
Just goes to show you there's another guy, some depth there that they have that could step up and make plays.
And Charles Clay. Look, he was a very good receiver for the Dolphins last year, and he stepped in and hasn't missed a beat in Buffalo, and they'll do awful lot of that play action I spoke about. You know, those, you know, misdirections. They'll fake the run one play, and the tight end will just leak out and squirt out
that
to the opposite
the play
on the rollout. They'll run that a lot, and for a young quarterback that's inexperienced, a tight end's a good security blanket. So Charles Clay has the potential to be a pretty big weapon for the Bills coming your way on Sunday.
Well, there's a reason why they aggressively pursued him. Remember, he was given the franchise tag, the transition tag, excuse me, and then Buffalo went after him after it looked like he was going to stay with Miami.
Now, a couple things with the Bills, too. Their third down conversion defense has actually been pretty poor this year, just 15 of 38. 15 to 38, and that's with the Dolphins having an awful game. They're actually allowing over 50% on third downs before that Dolphin game. And again, that reflects on that big game they had against the New England Patriots. So just a couple things to keep an eye on as the Giants get ready for the Bills. Very quickly on the Giants themselves, I think mostly good news from practice on Monday, Lance. A lot of the guys back on the practice field. Victor Cruz not doing team stuff, but doing individual stuff on the side. The anticipation is that I'll go full. I mean, I'm sure it'll be limited is in terms of number of snaps, but he will do all the team activity that the other players do on Wednesday. I would expect the same from Ayers. I would expect the same from Beeson, who obviously played last week. I think Odighizuwa is making his way back slowly but surely.
Flowers, too.
And then Flowers, is, I think, is the one guy that I think him and probably O were the two biggest question marks this week. You know, ankles can be tricky. We'll keep an eye on Eric Flowers. He couldn't play last week. I think that's the guy I'm most interested to see on Wednesday, to see how much he actually does. I expect Victor Cruz to do a lot. I want to see how he recovers on Thursday.
Well, that's the key. Correct.
Right.
I don't think you could jump the gun. And Tom Coughlin also was obviously trying to, you know, keep the excitement to a significant degree. And it's understandable because you want Victor Cruz to get out there for practice. But Thursday is going to determine, well, how did he recover from going hard on Wednesday? So I think until we see the next few days, it may be a little too early to jump the gun. But the positive, as you mentioned, John, everybody who was technically banged up or who had sat out Thursday's game, for the most part, took part or was on the field Monday. That is a big step forward for this squad.
Yeah, and the Giants hope to get a lot of them back. That'll help them try to beat the Buffalo Bills up there. And by the way, if our meteorologist Neil Shah is correct, it looks like it's supposed to rain a lot on Sunday and over the couple days before that. So it's a grass field. So that thing, you know, I don't know what the drainage situation is like up there. I don't know. I'm sure they'll cover with a tarp for the 2 days before the Giants play. I'm assuming there's no high school games or anything. I'm honestly, I haven't looked. I'm not sure about that.
High school football is big
upstate. But I haven't heard about it. I know it is.
Yeah.
So it's early, though. Usually they'll play those high school championship games later in the year at the NFL stadiums. But
Saturday is still a big day for high school.
I would assume they have the tarp on it, but then game day, if it pours, you never know what the footing is going to be like. And I feel like the Bills, and this is not meant to sound negative, have more of a helter-skelter offense. The Giants is a more precise offense based on timing, based on, you know, three-step drop, five-step drop. Everything has to be in sync. And I feel like the weather could maybe adversely affect the Giants offense a little bit more than Buffalo, since Taylor could improvise so well with his legs,
That's
run
fair.
Around, break some plays. So I would hope the weather is better than what it looks right now.
Well, and the other thing to note on that subject, John, their new offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, who was with the San Francisco 49ers, from what I've been hearing and from what I've been told, he tends to change up the script game to game. And, yes, I know every offensive coordinator does that. But the point I'm making is that he's very clever in terms of how he gets guys out into open space and so forth. So it wouldn't surprise me if he looks at the weather and says, hey, we're going to go with a completely different routine than normally what we've done.
And remember, Greg Roman knows how to have success with a quarterback like Tyrod Taylor. He had Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco and got the most out of him. And, boy, you see, it's funny. People complain that Greg Roman tried to, you know, turn Kaepernick into somebody that he wasn't and, you know, try to make him a pocket passer. Well, this year, the whole mantra out of San Francisco, we're going to let Colin Kaepernick do what he does well. How's that working out?
Well, that team is struggling on many different fronts, but you're right.
Kaepernick's been a mess.
Well, there was one point on Sunday where he had essentially more completions to Arizona Cardinals than he did to his own players. And I'm not trying to make light of it. The numbers show
that. That's funny, AR. That's fine.
I mean, it is what it is, yes. The numbers have not looked good for Colin Kaepernick.
No, absolutely not. We'll see Colin Kaepernick playing the Giants on October 11th, Sunday Night Football, and the Giants return home in about 12 days. 201-939-4513. Let's get to the calls, folks.
Absolutely.
And fans, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to play for free today. Mike in Oakland, California, has been holding since the start of the show. Mike, thank you for your patience. What's going on, pal?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. What's happening,
guys? Mike?
Doing well, Mike.
Hey, a couple things. You know, that was a real nice summary about the Bills and you know, I'm excited for the game, a little worried about that defense, and now hearing that it's going to be sloppy, I think you're right. I think that helps the Bills, not us. But was kind of calling to talk about really two positions this morning, the slot and the tight end.
Yeah.
So, you know, I saw that the Giants were going to work out Wes Welker, and that kind of made me think along these lines because I've been seeing it in the games where, you know, the outside wide receiver is like the big money position. You know, they get paid more than the slot receiver. They're kind of the big splash play guys, you know, and they tend to be the stars of the league. But, you know, a lot of times what wins football games is keeping drives alive. And to me, like the slot receiver and the tight end are those guys, you know. So without Victor Cruz, you know, the Reuben Randle, you know, he's a great story. I'm sorry things didn't work out. I wish him the best. But, you know, he dropped a lot of balls that killed drives. And so with Victor Cruz coming back, you know, I'm real excited about him. But I think realistically, you know, what are we going to get out of him? How much of the game is he going to be able to play? You know, timing, all these kind of things. So I thought it was really interesting to hear they were working Wes Welker out. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, we can't comment on that report directly, but I think you're right in terms of Cruz's playing time this week. I don't think you'll see him play more than 20-25 snaps, similar to what you saw John Beeson play last week. I think they'll have him on a pitch count. You know, it's a calf muscle. It's a muscle that, as we can tell, can be very temperamental, and it's something you can easily re-injure if you go too hard too quick. So, to me, if the Giants were theoretically going to add a slot receiver, they would have done so the last couple weeks while Cruz was out. Now that he's coming back, I'm not sure that, you know, there's some, you know, there's not a ton of logic there, to me at least. But, look, I think Cruz will be out there. His mere presence is going to help you. How productive he's going to be, Lance, in his first game of football in a year and without really practicing for a month, I don't know if you can count him to be a huge productive weapon, but he will certainly be a presence on Sunday.
Well, his presence is going to help John because he's going to at least draw some attention. Yeah. You have to account for Victor Cruz if you're the Buffalo defense because it's basically a mystery right now. You don't know what to expect out of Victor Cruz.
And if you don't think Rex Ryan remembers that 98, 99-yard reception against the Jets, trust me, he does.
Absolutely. So that awareness alone, they're certainly going to focus on Victor Cruz. But, Mike, your point about, you know, the reports, and obviously it's all speculation at this point, Giants working people out. Also keep in mind, you know, the Giants, like any other team, usually on their off day, they always bring in players. They always keep up to date on guys that are out there. So, you know, that doesn't mean that you can necessarily read between the lines and say, you know, somebody's coming in. I think this is a generic thing that happens across the NFL landscape.
All the teams do their due diligence.
Yes.
Yeah, and I get that. But, you know, I kind of look at, I love the old Bill Parcells offense where we basically just said, hey, guess what, we're going to run the ball this down, and hey, guess what, we're going to run it again, and nobody could stop us, right? But we're not there. So, the way the league has changed because, you can only touch a receiver in the first 5 yards, you can't crush him across the middle. You know, I just think that slot position, you know, the guy who sits down in the zone, that short read and gets you that first down, you know, they should get paid, and that's what we're missing right now in a big way. So, you know, it's just interesting, and, you know, I think that's one thing where Victor Cruz, yeah, you know, he's broken some long runs, he's done some amazing things, but, you know, if you look at his numbers, like, he's got so many receptions where he just uses his intelligence, and he just can be counted on as a security blanket for Eli. He just sits down, bang, 7 yards, right? Like the old short runs we used to count on, now it's a short pass. But I just don't know, you know, Jeremy Davis and Dwayne Harris, you know, I haven't really seen them step in. I don't know if they can do it. I thought Reuben Randles looked good in the slot, but we still have to account for the number of snaps that Victor's not going to be there. So just want to kind of throw that out there for you. But the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is, you know, Larry Donald, I really liked what I saw from him at times last year. You know, big guy, basketball player, you know, should know how to use his body, showed great hands at times. But what I'm seeing from him this year, and, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm seeing a guy who just does not want the contact. You know, like the way he did that crazy forward flip in the last game after he had the ball, I mean, I've never seen anything like that thing. And so what worries me about him now is that he's just, it's in his head. You know, he's afraid of the contact. And, you know, I'm just kind of worried that maybe the Larry Donald, improvement train is not going to leave the station. So kind of wondered also about Matt Lacoste because I heard all these great things about him. We gave him an injury settlement. He went to the Jets. He got cut. What's the chances of getting that guy back on the practice squad?
Well, I'm not sure what the injury settlement was that he reached with the Giants. And when you have an injury settlement, or he might have just been injured waived. I'm not sure if there was a settlement there. But yeah. I'm not sure what his status is, and I'm not sure what his deal is right now. In terms of Donnell, I don't think he's afraid of contact per se. I just think he's been really inconsistent. And he played really well the first half of last season. I think we saw some of the same stuff we're seeing early this year at the end of last year. And I think we've seen a carryover. So now Larry Donnell has to go out there and make a decision. Does he want to be the player that he was for the first half of last year, which is a borderline Pro Bowl caliber receiving tight end? Now, the blocking has a long way to go. We all know that. Or is he going to be a guy that you can't trust with the football and drops passes and fumbles the football? Which of those guys is Larry Donnell going to be? And it's time for him to go out there, be more consistent, and show the Giants who he is so they know what they have at that position. Mike, we appreciate the call, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
The other thing I was just going to add real quickly before I get back to the tight end, you know, Mike was talking about the slot. Don't forget, Shane Vereen could be used at his slot, too.
That's true.
You know, that's an option.
Great
so let's
point.
Not forget about that. Just don't focus on the wide receivers. You could utilize his strength as a receiver out of the backfield in that slot position, which he played when he was in New England. I agree with you, John. In terms of Larry Donnell, you know, the key word, the key term is consistency. We've seen flashes this season. We've seen him block for Rashad Jennings on a big run against the Dallas Cowboys, and we've seen him make some plays to move the chains. At the same time, we've also seen the case of the dropsies, and we've seen some mental mistakes, and we saw that at times last season too. So, you know, there's upside there, but in order to be a guy that opponents are going to fear and defenses are going to start to double-team, like they did remember after all of a sudden he had that 3-touchdown game against Washington, you have to be consistent.
Yeah.
Consistent not just from game to game, but snap to snap as well. because right now things are so convoluted and technical in the NFL that, you know, if they pick up a tendency, they're going to look elsewhere and they're going to say, hey, we can get by with maybe leaving this guy open. We'll focus our attention elsewhere. So that's why it's key for him to be consistent.
And something else Mike brought up, too. He says, well, you know, maybe Cruz can't play all the snaps this week, so you need somebody to supplement him in the slot. Well, how ready is a guy they pick up this week in two practices going to know the offense and step in and contribute right away, too?
No, you can't expect somebody to come and snap their fingers and know the scheme, especially somebody who hasn't played under McAdoo or something similar to Green Bay. So you definitely need to take that into consideration. Victor Cruz is their best option right now out of the slot, but you have to at least realize game one is going to be an opportunity for him to get his legs back underneath him, and then you hope that it continues to progress moving forward. I would expect them to ease him in very slowly. They're not going to throw him out there for every single snap right away if he does play against Buffalo. It'll be a progression as you move forward the next few weeks.
Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis next. Abdul, I know you want to talk about JPP, but it's going to be the same answer we've given you for the past month.
Well,
so what do you got?
Actually, it's a different spin on it, so
okay.
Just bear with me.
Yep.
First thing, it just shows how harsh this league is that, you know, Hakeem Nicks, Wes Walker, and Cooley are just trying to lock on the team where a few years ago they were all-stars. It's just crazy how fast people go down.
Not for long, Abdul. Not for long.
Injuries and so forth.
I know. I hear you. And second of all, I'm really excited about seeing this defense almost up to full strength this week with Ayers back and hopefully Double O back. I think, you know, it'll be a good barometer to see actually what this team could be in the future. I think so far we've been kind of undermanned on the defense, and it showed. So I'm kind of excited to see how we perform with some of our guys back in the lineup, which leads me into the JPP comment. And it's hard to say this, but I kind of agree with Charlie from Portland, which is kind of scary. I don't see the downside of just bringing him in and working him in slowly. Guys have played in this league with broken hands, broken arms and casts. Get him in here, sprinkle him in.
No, but Abdul. The Giants would love to have him here. JPP doesn't want to be here for the money that they're talking about. This is a negotiation period.
Sign
it's not
the
like
guy for his sign the guy for his tenure. It's his tender.
Wait, hold on. Time out. You want to pay a guy his full tender when you don't even know when he's going to play for you? But then waste that salary cap space. Charlie's the same guy who every year Abdul calls up and complains that the Giants have no money to sign free agents. Now you want to throw money at a guy that might not be able to play, so you have less money to sign players last next year. No, you can't do that.
Well, and Abdul, the other thing before we let you continue, you know, you mentioned have him come in and ease him back in. You know, there's no guarantee he's ready to play football right now. There's a reason why he's not with the team right now. It's not just financial; it's also medical. He's still recovering. So you can't just say we're going to wrap his hand around something and all of a sudden we're going to throw him out there. You know, medically he has to get cleared, both from his own people as well as from the Giants' medical staff. If he was ready to play, you would assume they would have gotten to that point.
It's not our doctors have cleared him. I've heard other doctors have cleared him, but the Giants...
Abdul,
all that matters is the Giants' people.
Abdul, who's saying that, though?
Well, you know, listen,
No, Abdul, answer my question. Abdul, answer my question.
His doctors are saying that, right?
And why do you think his doctors are saying that?
Because they want the guy to play.
No, because JPP wants to get paid.
The Giants also are protecting themselves. You know, they want to save money. So there's a bias on the Giants side also. Now, the Giants aren't perfect, but that they have nothing behind them.
Abdul, don't you think that the Giants, if they thought JPP can come in and be a very good pass rusher, they would jump at the chance to have him on the field?
I'm not too confident about the Giants' thought process. They caught James Jones, and how's he doing? You know what I mean? So I think the Giants have perfect track.
So, Abdul, hold on. Abdul, you think that – so your theory right now is that JPP is good to go, ready to play, to be a very good pass rusher. The Giants just don't want him on the team.
We don't know. What do we have to lose? We have no pass
money
rush right now.
That's what you have to lose. You have salary cap space to lose. That's what you have to lose.
That money has already been allocated. It's not like we're supposed to be giving him more money.
You'll get
it
back next year.
We're already going to spend $14 million.
No, you're not. No, you're not going to spend $14 million. No, because he will get paid on a prorated basis based on how many games that he plays.
We're going to give him that money.
No,
right now we're getting money back as a bonus.
Abdul.
When the year started, weren't we going to give him that money?
I understand, but you could get that money back next year.
That's what was penciled in, Abdul, but things change depending on when he comes back to play.
Abdul, here's the thing. If JPP never plays a game this year, the Giants will have an additional $15 million to spend in free agency next year. That's huge.
I hear you. Okay, but right, listen, I'm just saying that we have a potential great pass rusher.
But he's not a great pass rusher right now. That's the point. If he
was, he would be here.
And when he is ready to be a great pass rusher, he'll be here. He's not ready to be a great pass rusher yet.
All right, well, listen, right now we have nothing. So that's all I'm saying.
And right now, Abdul, I don't think JPP can add to what's on the field right now because the Giants don't think he's physically capable of playing football.
So you're saying that you're not worth adding – okay. You guys aren't willing to take a chance. I think I am.
No, Abdul, the doctors looked at him. It's not taking a chance. They know he's not ready to play. Do you think if they magically bring him in here that it'll heal? That there's some magical formula in the swamps of East Rutherford that you'll pour it on the wound and the wound's going to heal?
Okay, listen, boy, I got to get me some of that stuff.
I guess we're looking at these two different things. I look online. I've seen him lifting weights. I've seen him running around. He looks like he's physically okay. But you know what? You're right. I'm not a doctor. You're not a doctor. This is just my 5 cents or 2 cents or whatever. You know what I mean? I look at our lack of pass rush and how it affects us in games.
No, Abdul,
and I see JPP as a possible answer.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. If JPP was ready to be a great pass rusher, guess what?
Yeah.
He'd be on the field and he'd be a great pass rusher. The Giants know they need a better pass rush. They know if he's healthy that JPP could help in that regard. But right now, they've examined him. They do not believe that he is ready to be a positive impact player on the football field for them. And that's the judgment that they've made.
And I have a question. Is it a rumor that they're going to look at him after 6 weeks, or is that something they actually said? I'm not really sure where that came from.
Giants haven't said anything about a specific timetable at all. The only thing that's been documented is that he did come into the facility, they spoke to one another, and then he went back home. That's the only thing that has been documented. I mean, outside of that, everybody is talking from every which angle. Clearly, there's a number of different perspectives that are being thrown out. But, you know, I mean, I can't emphasize enough, Abdul, and you're entitled to your opinion, just like everybody else is out there. If JPP was ready right now today and effective on the football field, I would say it would be safe to say that the Giants would have put him on the field by now. So, I mean, I think if you put the facts together, he's not at the point where he can be an effective football player as it stands today.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm excited to see Double O and Aris out there and see what they can do.
So are we.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you hope those two guys can help and get this Giants pass rush better because you're right. If you take a look at the common thread throughout the first three games this year, you want to get more pressure on the quarterback without blitzing. And we've seen Spags have to blitz, and those blitzes haven't gone home as much as you would like either. But you got to see somebody beat the man across from them one-on-one. And the one guy we did see do that fairly consistently the first couple weeks of the year was Robert Ayers. I thought he did a pretty good job putting fairly consistent pressure on the quarterback. He didn't get home, but he rushed the quarterback. He disrupted rhythm. And I think you hope Ayers can do that when he gets back on the field this week.
Well, as you just mentioned, he was a disruptive player. Remember, he deflected two passes at the line of scrimmage. Let's not forget about that. And I'll take that just as effective as a sack is, John, because you're leading to an incompletion and you're disrupting the flow of the opposition in terms of the offense. So I think Ayers has been all over the place. He's been very effective. Remember, he didn't play Thursday. So when you take him out of the equation, it changes the dynamics of the defense and it changes the rotation. You get him back, you know, that certainly is a big boost. And then Owa has yet to play one game. So you bring both of those players back in, I think that should certainly have a positive influence on the Giants' pass rush. Is it going to all of a sudden take it from 2 sacks to 10? That's not necessarily going to be guaranteed, but you're going to have a better mixture of talent that you could utilize.
Hey, look, and I get where fans are coming from. The fans say we need a pass rush. Well, Jason Pierre-Paul is sitting there. And look, the Giants would love to be able to snap their fingers and the Jason Pierre-Paul from the middle of last year, the end of last year, walks in the door and is ready to rush the passer. They'd love that. But physically, as the team has stated publicly, he's not ready to do that yet. So they're obviously in contact. They will continue to monitor his health and his situation. And when they believe he's ready to come in and play and be effective, they'll bring him in and he'll be here. Guys, trust me. The Giants are not just saying, oh, well, this guy can be a great pass rusher. We don't need him. Get out of here. That's not what they're doing. That's not what they're doing. There's a reason they gave him that franchise tender before the year. And there's a reason that they were going to sign him to that franchise tender before the incident happened. That's why you slap a tender on a guy, because you think he's worth that amount of money for the year. Obviously, once you're not healthy and your health prevents you from being that type of player, things change. But that's basically where we are right now.
John, before you go back to the phone calls, and this is somewhat related to JPP arguably was one of the best run stoppers on this Giants defensive line. I think what's been impressive, and everybody does want to focus on the pass rush, John. Now, let's not forget, the Giants are number two in the league against the run, and that is a huge 180 compared to where they were at this point last season. So, you know, that is step one in terms of turning this defense around. Step two is now, okay, you're consistently stopping the run through the first three games. Now you want to try to get to the quarterback, but let's not lose focus and overlook the strides they've made in stopping the run. I mean, that's just as effective and just as important before you start getting to the quarterback, because you can't sell out. You have to stop the run, regardless of how aggressive you are as a defense.
And Hankins has been great in that regard. George Selvey, I think, has provided a very consistent play in that regard. Robert Ayers, when he was on the field, was good in that regard. So a lot of these guys have provided pretty solid run defense. And you're right, that is step number one. And that is a huge difference from the last couple of years. And I'll throw Landon Collins into the mix, too. He's made some plays around the line of scrimmage in the running game, too. Wanayunga stepped in there with John Beeson was out. Now Beeson can play more snaps, and he can be a part of that. Kennard, JT Thomas on the outside, they've done a good job against the run. So you're right. That was a big goal this week, this offseason, Lance. And so far, it has certainly worked. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. We have to review Jeff Fiegel's picks later on in the show.
Okay.
We'll also be joined by Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com in about 10 minutes at 12:45. In the meantime, let's get back to the busy phones and say what's up to Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's up?
I'm more excited for this game than the Washington game, even though that was a must-win in a division, because I think this is going to be such a close, competitive fight. And even closer, the Washington game was closer than it appeared, you know, in the fourth quarter. But I'm psyched. And the term, when you play them, I think now we're in a better state than if we played them week one, because Flowers should come back. Beeson will get more playing time. Cruz is back. Robert Ayers, the offensive line, it's not their first ever game together. The linebacker, Unga, Collins. So I think the Giants are much better situation this week, and they had the extra time to heal. So I'm totally excited about that.
Yeah, Andrew,
and
you know what?
I ask you about Robert Ayers.
Yeah, go ahead.
His health.
You know, Robert Ayers, I think, hopes to play this week. He was questionable last week, and obviously he's going to have 10 days to recover now between the Thursday game and the Sunday game. So I think the team, and thanks a lot for the call, Andrew. We appreciate it. They're very optimistic on that Ayers can get out there and play this week.
Well, the fact that he was out there to a limited degree at least yesterday, I think certainly helped, considering he missed Thursday's game. So once again, Wednesday, Thursday is going to be a better indicator of where Robert Ayers is with the hamstring. But I think right now they're certainly optimistic that hopefully he'll be able to suit up on Sunday.
What was the first thing Andrew said in that call? I was going to have a comment on that. Then I forget.
Well, he talked about the fact that I would agree. I think from a health perspective, the team is in much better shape now than it was perhaps in week one and week two.
Yeah, and I think what I was going to say, because it's a big test for the healthy guys on defense. To me, this is the ultimate test game for this offensive line. A couple people on Twitter made this point as well. Last week, the Redskins, they're very good defensively, but the Giants took a big lead early, and then it's hard to blitz and things like that. But look, the Giants O-line did a great job last week against Hatcher and Knighton, you know, and Paya and all those guys up front. They did a great Kerrigan. They did a great job. But to me, this Bills team and Mario Williams, Marcel Darius, Kyle Williams, this is
– Jerry Hughes is another effective guy.
You will never have a bigger test all year for your offensive line, their continuity, their communication, how they're playing together than you will against the Bills this week. With all their blitzes and moving things around and, you know, Rex Ryan standing a lot of guys up trying to, you know, mess with offensive linemen's heads, this is the game where I think you're going to say, you know what? Let's see if this offensive line has really taken as big of a step forward as we think they have the first three games this year, at least in terms of pass protection. The running game you want to be better, but protecting Eli Manning, this offensive line has been pretty darn good. But this is the ultimate test this week to see how far they've really come.
Well, in terms of the aggressive defenses that they've seen this season, I wouldn't categorize Dallas in that.
They don't have a great pass rush. Neither does Atlanta.
Atlanta, aggressive, much more aggressive than in previous seasons, but not nearly as effective as what Buffalo lines up.
Well, yeah.
In terms of personnel.
They don't have the individually talented players.
Correct.
At the Bills.
Washington, you named, I think, better run stoppers than, per se, pass rushers.
Kerrigan's
for the Redskins.
Their best pass rusher.
Yeah. I mean, Terrence Knighton is known as a guy that could get into the holes and stop the run.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Buffalo clearly has the most versatile group of pass rushers that they have seen so far in these first four games.
All right, let's go back to the calls. We'll take a couple more before we get to Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com at 12:45. Anthony in Georgia, you're up next, Anthony. What's up, pal?
John, Lance, what's going on, fellas?
What's up, dude? How are you?
Doing well. How's everything with you, Anthony?
Doing good, man. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks for being a part of the show, man. Appreciate you listening.
You know, I bleed blue.
Excellent.
Some quick points. What your caller was saying earlier about Larry Donnell, it's so funny because at the end of last season, you could kind of tell he was afraid to get hit, and he kept fumbling. And I'm wondering if the fumbles are playing a part in his mind, like, let me brace myself because I don't want to fumble the ball, so let me leave my feet and try to do a flip to land or something, because you could kind of tell. I've been noticing that from the end of last year. Like, he catches the ball over the middle, and every guy's going to be afraid to get hit over the middle, but it takes a real person with a lot of heart to say, I'm going to catch the ball, I know I'm going to get hit, I'm going to hold on anyway.
Well, Anthony, real quick, and I'll let you finish. I know one thing Tom Coughlin drilled into Larry Donnell's head halfway through last year after he had that multiple fumble game, like I think it was against Dallas, right? He basically said, in order to protect the football, you can't leave your feet. If you leave your feet, you're making yourself vulnerable to fumbling the football. So if that's Larry Donnell's thought process, he's screwed up in the head because they told him that to protect the football, you can't leave your feet. And going airborne is not helping him. It's hurting them. Now finish up your point.
It's not. It's not at all. And the funny thing is, even in the game the other day, like one of the catches he missed on third down, you could tell he had it right in his hand, but he was turning his head to look for the contact.
Absolutely.
The ball dropped.
Agree with
that.
Then
the other one, when he caught it and then a flip.
Well, he left his feet
even
again.
The commentator said he started to flip somersault before the guy got there.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah. But it's just, you know. That was the first thing. The second thing is, from what your caller was saying earlier about JPP, I understand Giants fans want an extra pass rush, but from somebody that does surgery all the time, it's not that. People just think the doctors give you a timetable, 4 to 6 weeks. You still have to rehab. You still have to heal. You still have to build back up your strength, get your muscle going. So it's not just overnight. Even if he comes back, last season we didn't have a good pass rush to say, oh, my God, he's just going to jump back in the mix and we're going to start getting sacked. So let him heal. Let him do what he needs to do. We've been doing what we have to do from now on anyway. So, you know, we'll make it work. But I understand the passion from the Giants, man. We need a pass rush.
So do I. Anthony, I get it too, and I'm telling you, as soon as he's ready and the Giants think he can be a big help in the pass rush, I'm fairly confident that he'll be here. But right now they don't think he's ready to do that.
Thank you, guys, man. That's all I had.
All right, Anthony.
Great call,
the
Anthony.
Call.
Appreciate the call, man.
No, right now,
you
got to look at the internal options.
Yeah.
That's what's going to help this
pass
rush.
Hope DeMontre Moore steps up, gives you something. Maybe Kerry Wynn picks it up a little bit in terms of the pass rush. He's been a pretty good run stopper earlier this year, too. I should have mentioned him earlier in the show.
George Selvey's another guy, too, who has been known for getting to the quarterback and
he got
stopping the run.
6.5 sacks for Dallas 2 years ago?
Believe
Seven?
In that ballpark.
Something like that. Anyway. Final call before we get to Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com. His name was invoked by a caller, so I'm sure he has to call up to try to defend himself.
Well, that's the only reason why he called.
State his
up.
Own opinion.
He hears his name, but he gets excited.
Well, Charlie gets very excited. It is all about him, after
absolutely.
All. What's up, Charlie?
Yes.
How are you?
The ego.
Hey, John, before your head blows off, I want to say a couple of things.
Yeah.
Hey, you said one thing, like I'm always saying that we don't have enough cap money to get free agents. That's not what I've said. What I said was, we could have restructured some contracts like Eli's back in March, and we would have had, by capologists, at least $10 to $11 million more to use in free agency. So that's what I said. And as far as JPP, it's been reported by many, many sources, many, many people, that the Giants said they would take a look at him after 6 weeks. So that's probably the timetable. They'll look at him again. They'll decide if they think he's ready in 6 weeks. If he's not, what he can do, he can go to the Players Association and say, these guys are not allowing me to play. They will get an independent doctor to deem whether he is or not, and then there will be who knows what will happen from that point. That's a possibility. Hopefully it won't get to that. Hopefully in 6 weeks he will be ready to play, and the Giants will say, yeah, he is, and he'll be back on the team playing in week 8. That's what I'm hoping for. And the only other thing I wanted to say is about Chicago's having a fire sale right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Jared Allen, we need a pass rusher. Where is he? He's a Panther. There was a linebacker sitting there. Not that we need linebackers, but the point is the Pats are always trying to get better. They gave a sixth-round pick to get themselves a linebacker. I just tweeted that.
That's always dangerous.
Jeffries is the guy they want to get rid of, and also there's a possibility of Bennett.
They want to trade Alshon Jeffries?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because he's going to be a free agent.
Free agent. Matt Forte is also going to be a free agent.
Yeah, Matt.
They're exploring plenty of options.
Cowboy.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about. But they're also talking about them, Marcellus Bennett. Wouldn't it be great to finally get a tight end that can actually block, can actually catch, and he can actually stay on his feet? That would be a great get if we could go out and bring Bennett back. That would be what JR should be looking at. I don't know what – I think the Donnell experiment as a tight end is over. I think we should move on from him. Now, I'm not saying cut him, but he should not be a starter. He should be, like, third string because he's just not doing it. And I know TC gets very upset with him, and I don't think he's going to put up with him, you know, rolling over like an acrobat every time he catches the ball or misses the ball. So I think his days are numbered. Tell you the truth.
See, Charlie, I stayed calm.
Yeah.
I'm calm. It's all good.
Yeah, I know. You're really calm. Hey, John, I didn't make it to the preseason game with the Pats because once I found out that Brady got exonerated, it was going to be a friggin' love fest, and I did not want to be in that stadium to witness that.
Well, Charlie, John is very thankful that you didn't show up for that game because I know if I was at that game, I'd be very thankful myself.
Well, we have a plan, and the thing about – and, Charlie, real quick – the way the Giants radio booth is set up, it's actually right by the stands. You actually walk out of the press box area, you're right in the concourse. So I actually could have met Charlie face-to-face, which I was kind of looking forward to.
And then you would have regretted that for the rest of your life.
Charlie, thank you for the
call,
my friend. We
got to
run.
All right, Charlie,
okay,
appreciate the call.
Appreciate
Thanks so much.
It. All right, remember, fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, a daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter code New York to play for free today. Joining us on the program, as we prefaced earlier, Chris Brown covers the Bills for BuffaloBills.com. Chris, a big win. Welcome to the show. Coming off against an AFC East opponent in the Miami Dolphins. People must be feeling a lot better about the Bills up there than they were about a week ago today, coming off that game against the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. Good to be with you, by the way. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
no problem.
I think they thought that they were going to bounce back. They were pretty confident in that. And I think what they felt was the key to that was how they played in the fourth quarter in the Week 2 game against the Patriots. I mean, they were down big at the end of the third quarter. It was 37-13. But the Bills in the fourth quarter, their offense stages three straight scoring drives, putting it in the end zone three straight times, and they actually made it a five-point game with 4 minutes to play. And even though they didn't pull that thing out in the end, talking to some of the players, I was talking to Percy Harvin, and he said a lot of people were down in the dumps after that game against the Patriots, but I was pretty happy, he said, because I felt we were going to be right back on track next week with our offense and our execution. And, sure enough, they come out like a house on fire. I mean, 5-play, 77-yard drive to start the game. Tyrod Taylor goes 5 of 5 for all 77 yards, and they really had that Dolphins defense on their heels right away and just kind of went from there. I mean, it was 24-0. 27-0 at halftime, and that game was over, by the time the two teams were going to the locker room at the half. And, I was really impressed with just how their attitude coming out of a game where they were really humbled defensively, giving up 466 passing yards to Tom Brady, which was the most ever in Bills history for a defense, to come back and to really clamp down on Ryan Tannehill and make life supremely difficult for him. It was a nice bounce-back effort by them for sure.
Well, Chris, that brings me to the defense here. As you just alluded to, that New England game really brought up the numbers defensively compared to where a lot of people thought Buffalo would be ranked at this point of the season. So you see they're number one against the run, yet they're 31st against the pass. So how much do you dismiss that New England performance? What is the true identity of this Bills defense right now?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady's Tom Brady. I think one of the statistical sites out there, I think it might have been Pro Football Focus. I mean, I think they had a story up this week that basically said through the first 3 weeks of this season, Tom Brady's got the ball out of his hand on average faster than any quarterback since they've been doing this statistic.
Wow.
And it's about, I think it's a little over 2 seconds It's like 2.2 seconds or something like that. And I think in the game against the Bills, it was coming out even faster than that. I think it was 1.97 for the first half. I mean, I don't care what kind of pass rush you have. And the Bills have more sacks than any team in the NFL over the last 2 years with 111. But I don't care who you are. You could have Usain Bolt as your defensive end, and he could be coming clean, and he's not getting to Tom Brady before the ball's out. So you have to shift your focus to better coverage. And quite frankly, the coverage was not up to snuff, you know, in that game against the Patriots. It was significantly better against Miami, and the Bills committed wholeheartedly to press coverage to force Ryan Tannehill to take that extra hitch, you know, with his arm, and not release the ball quite as fast. Now, you're not going to see that in the sack total for the Bills, but you're certainly going to see it in terms of the pressure, quarterback hits, hurried throws. Perfect example is probably the blitz that they put on with Bakari Rambo coming from his deep safety position. You know, he timed his blitz perfectly. He's at the line at the snap of the ball. He comes clean, gets a hit on Tannehill, doesn't sack him, but the ball kind of floats out of his hand. Preston Brown intercepts it, goes 43 yards the other way for a touchdown.
We're joined by Chris Brown, covers the Bills for BuffaloBills.com. And Chris, I rewatched the first half of that Dolphin-Bill game right before the show started today, and I was actually surprised because I had watched the second half live, and I saw the Bills doing so much of that zone blitz stuff, bringing pressure. I didn't think they blitzed a whole lot in the first half against Miami. They had a couple big plays. The safety blitz caused that one turnover where he came free through the middle. But otherwise, I thought it was mostly four-man pressures, maybe a couple five-man pressures here or there, and they just did a really good job pressuring Tannehill with the four guys up front, and I thought the coverage was also pretty tight in the secondary.
Yeah, they committed to coverage more, and that helped. And the, like I said, the coverage was tighter. They played more press in the first half than they did against New England in the first half. And quite frankly, their guys won more of the one-on-one matchups up front. And part of the reason for that is Miami's offensive line is struggling. I mean, Mario Williams has had his way with Juwan James last year as a rookie right tackle and was pretty successful, you know, on Sunday. And then Jerry Hughes was playing against a backup left tackle in Jason Fox with Brandon Albert out with the hamstring injury. So right off the bat, you know, they had advantages there. And then Dallas Thomas and Jameel Douglas, the two guards for the Dolphins. I mean, Douglas is a rookie going against Marcel Darius. I mean, that's not even fair. And then, you know, Kyle Williams going against Dallas Thomas, who was a guy that wasn't even good enough to start for that team last year and now is a starter by default. I mean, the Bills just really had way too much talent up front where, you know, I think Rex Ryan felt very confident in saying, let's just let our four go against their five. We're going to get enough pressure there, commit to coverage with seven, and we should be successful, and they were.
Talking with Chris Brown, who covers the Bills for BuffaloBills.com. Chris, you just laid out the entire front seven, basically, for the Buffalo Bills, how strong that group has produced. But, you know, when you see 31st against the pass, and I know there were some issues against New England, it maybe brings in some questions about the secondary, which is at least young at one corner position because Darby, who was their rookie, one of their selections this year, he's now starting.
And playing real well, by the way.
Absolutely. Ooh. He has been quite impressive. How has this secondary come together, especially considering they do have some injuries at the safety position?
Yeah, I mean, they have. I think they've been okay. You know, I think they were very good against Indianapolis in week one, which has a pretty deep receiving core themselves. Mm-hmm. Pressure up front certainly helped them with their success, you know, in coverage in the secondary in week one. Week two, you know, I think part of the scheming was a little bit off, which is why Rex Ryan put that loss on himself. You know, in week two, he said he didn't scheme it up right, and I think he's right about that because they played way too much off coverage against Brady, who we've already talked about getting the ball out of his hand so quick. If you're going to play off coverage, it's going to be pitch and catch for them all day. You know, they got back to playing press coverage, and I think that's what these corners do best. I mean, Stephon Gilmore is a physical, in-your-face corner that likes to make contact right at the line of scrimmage, reroute receivers, and win battles on jump balls by using his, you know, strong frame. I mean, Ronald Darby, as you said, has been very impressive. He's a guy that really doesn't mind a challenge, doesn't back down to anything. You know, Rex Ryan threw him into the fire in the preseason, put him on an island for the entire first preseason game, wanted to see how he was going to handle a pressure cooker. And he had some struggles because he was on Kelvin Benjamin the whole day before he went out for the season with an ACL. But I think he learned from those kinds of experiences in the preseason and prepared him all the more for the regular season with Leotis McKelvin out until at least week seven on PUP right now. So, you know, I think those guys are, you know, Darby's learning on the fly, but he's getting better each and every week. And their nickel corner, Nickel Roby, is one of the better ones in the league. So it'll be interesting if Victor Cruz comes back this week. That'll be one of the more interesting matchups. But, yeah, Aaron Williams was out last week after suffering a neck injury. You know, coach is kind of keeping his availability close to the vest, although last week he said early reports were signs were pointing to him being available this week. We'll just have to see what happens on the practice field Wednesday and Thursday. But Bakari Rambo, as you saw last week, had a decent game. So
yeah,
they've got some depth there at safety. We'll have to see.
All right, we're joined by Chris Brown. I want to switch gears to the offense. We have him for a few more minutes. Covers the Buffalo Bills for BuffaloBills.com. Chris, I love the way the Bills used Tyrod Taylor in that game against the Miami Dolphins. You mentioned that first drive where he went zip, 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 5 for 5 right down the field. Either all 5 or 4 of the 5 passes came off of play action. They're not telling him to go back, sit there, go through 4 progressions and make a throw. They're using him in play action. They're using him out of the shotgun a lot. They're moving him outside the pocket. He's reading only half the field. I think they've really done a great job of playing to his strengths, but at the same time not simplifying the offense to the point where it makes it easier for other teams to defend it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point. You know, I don't think they want to put too much on his plays, but make no mistake, I mean, Tyrod Taylor is a pretty sharp quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Quarterbacks coach David Lee even said he believes that Tyrod's got a photographic memory with his retention rate. I mean, there was a practice during training camp where right before they went on the field, you know, to run the play call sheet, he asked each of the quarterbacks, you know, what do we got today? And Tyrod pretty much recited all 18 plays.
Wow.
And then the next question he asked them was, well, what about the play call sheet from yesterday? And Tyrod recited all 18 plays from the play call sheet the day before. So this is a pretty sharp tack that they've got here at the quarterback position. And though he only had 13 game appearances in his career before he came up here, you know, this is a guy that was learning at the elbow of, you know, a Pro Bowl quarterback, Super Bowl winning quarterback, and Joe Flacco for 4 years. Had the privilege of being coached by, you know, two guys that are head coaches in the league right now, and Jim Caldwell and Gary Kubiak, who served as offensive coordinators under John Harbaugh in Baltimore, and also Cam Cameron, you know, who's been a head coach, albeit for just a year in Miami. You know, I think he's learned a lot of football in his 4 years, and, you know, he's certainly a great argument for these college quarterbacks to come into the league, sit and learn for a few years, knowing how different the college game is from the pro game now, and that that gap is getting wider and wider. You might be best served to take a quarterback high, sit him down for a couple of years, and then put him in. You might get what the Bills are getting right now with Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, Chris, it wasn't my intention to imply that he wasn't a smart quarterback, but with a guy that doesn't have a ton of experience, you want to kind of get him into the system slowly a little bit. You don't want to, you know, throw him completely to the wolves right away. I think the Bills have just done a tremendous job, as you just said, transitioning him to a starter's role and really using him to his strengths and putting him in a great situation to succeed.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to tip your hat there to Greg Roman on that one. I mean, that's a guy that's a proven play caller in this league from his success out there in San Francisco with Jim Harbaugh. The guy knows how to draw it up. And I would say the two drives to open the game the last 2 weeks, I mean, they look like downright masterpieces.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, they didn't win the game against New England, but 10 plays, 80 yards, and the Patriots didn't know what was going on. He's mixing personnel groupings. But, yeah, I mean, he's got Taylor out there, and I don't think he's oversimplifying it, but he's giving him something that he knows Tyrod's comfortable with.
Yep.
And Tyrod's good enough to improvise.
Well, and speaking of Greg Roman, Chris, you mentioned that he's done such a good job utilizing all these playmakers that they brought in specifically via free agency. For example, on that opening drive against the Dolphins, it seemed as if they were targeting Charles Clay. He got involved. He got that early touchdown. So in comparison to what you've seen out of the Buffalo Bills offense over the last few years, and I understand the personnel has changed, but what has Greg Roman brought to the table? How much has this offense evolved with now him running things?
Well, I mean, I think it's far more multiple and varied than we've seen in recent years. I mean, Rex Ryan was even joking about it during training camp. I mean, he said they had to bring in Greg Roman's playbook on a cart. it was that thick and voluminous. But then the challenge becomes, do you have players that are capable of retaining all that information, even in a game plan where it's a lot smaller week to week? But Greg Roman has a knack for having an enormous volume of material, but then making a game plan so small and succinct, but then he runs a lot of the same plays out of so many different pre-snap looks and formations and personnel groupings and motions that it looks like it's a lot, but really for the players it isn't. And I think that's the method to his madness that works so well in terms of keeping opposing defenses off balance, but keeping his players, you know, in a framework that allows them to execute, play fast, and not have to overthink things.
A couple more quickies for Chris Brown. Chris, a couple injuries on the offensive side of the ball for your team. LeSean McCoy, the hamstring. Sammy Watkins, the calf. Expectations for them this week? Do you expect them to practice? Do you expect them to play? And if they can't go, how do you view the Bills recovering and playing without them?
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Watkins actually just walked by me in the hallway here. Had a nice little spring in his step, so that's encouraging. But, you know, Rex was keeping it very close to the vest this week with respect to any and all injuries. Now, the one thing he did say, and he was speaking generally when he said this, you know, he said usually, in general, when players are injured and aren't able to finish the game that they had to leave early, in many cases they don't play the next week. Now, I'm sure we can all find exceptions to that statement, but some people are being led to believe or are speculating that, you know, he's not all that optimistic about Sammy or John Miller, the rookie right guard who starts for this offensive line. I don't think it'll be catastrophic if Sammy can't play this week because of all the offensive weapons they were able to assemble here in the offseason. You mentioned Charles Clay. They've got Percy Harvin. You know, and you have depth at the receiver position. I mean, Robert Woods is a very underrated receiver that runs those short to intermediate routes as good as anybody. And Chris Hogan comes in the game last week after Watkins left, catches a 39-yard touchdown pass, New Jersey kid from Wyckoff. So, you know, I think the depth is there at the receiver position. And even at running back, if McCoy is, you know, limited or can only go, you know, 20, 25 snaps on Sunday, I mean, Carlos Williams is tearing it up right now. I think he leads the league in yards per carry average. He's got a touchdown on each of his first three starts. I mean, for a fifth-round pick, he's been dynamite.
All right, final question, Chris. When the Buffalo Bills defense, you know it well, lines up against the Giants, you know they have to worry about a very dynamic wide receiver in Odell Beckham. How do you expect Rex Ryan and his staff to game plan for a guy like that? Are they just going to try to take him out of the game, make somebody else beat him? Or are they going to try to pressure and trust one of their young physical corners to give him trouble at the line of scrimmage? How do you think this Bills defense will approach this Giants offensive attack?
Yeah, it's been interesting because, you know, a lot of us thought in week one that they would have Stephon Gilmore, I mean, they're far and away number one corner, follow T.Y. Hilton all over the field in week one, and that just didn't happen. They played him straight up, relied on their pressure up front, and that helped the guys on the back end immeasurably. It wouldn't surprise me if Rex goes into his bag of tricks and relies on his people up front to get the pressure necessary to help the guys on the back end. So if I'm Eli Manning, I'm expecting a whole lot of exotic looks, blitzes, and different combinations with the front seven and, heck, even, you know, nickel corners blitzing off the edge, just about anything and everything you could dream up. I would expect Rex to be calling it in the game on Sunday. I mean, obviously stopping the run comes first, and, you know, you guys got a nice 1-2 punch there with Jennings and Williams. I think they'll focus their energies there and try to put the game on Eli's shoulders so they can pin their ears back and really get creative, especially on third downs.
And I should ask real quick, Chris, how do you expect this Bills offense to attack the Giants defense and what you're hearing?
Well, I mean, I think they'd like to get, you know, that run game going. Everybody thought that was going to be their approach against Miami, and then they come out throwing. And then come the third series, they start pounding the football on the ground. And, you know, Miami was gassed from two very quick-moving drives that led to touchdowns on the first two possessions. And, you know, they didn't have a whole lot in the tank to stop the run. Whether Greg Roman switches it up, we certainly know he's got a multiple enough offense to do so. I know your corners have not been great, and, you know, your defense has struggled against the pass, too. So it wouldn't shock me if, you know, they kind of try to come out throwing again here to at least start the game and see where that gets us.
Chris, we appreciate the time. Fantastic stuff. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you up there in what seems to be rainy Buffalo on Sunday afternoon.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Yeah, it's pouring here today, and it doesn't look like it's going to change all that much for the weekend. Hopefully it first up for you guys.
No, that sounds thrilling. Thank you, Chris.
All right, Chris. Appreciate the time.
Take it easy, my friend. Chris Brown, BuffaloBills.com. And real quick, Lance, week three is in the books, and it's time to review Jeff Fiegel's picks. And not shocking to me and you, he is not walking away with the big money.
Well.
However, some of his picks did do pretty well, and hopefully it helped you guys out. If you weren't here last week, this is what Fiegel's did. Quick recap. Tom Brady. Boy, he picked a good one, Feig. Sometimes the Patriots have those letdown games. Well, they're out for vengeance this year. Tom Brady, 350 yards, two touchdowns, lit up a Jaguars defense, 25 points, one of the fantasy's top quarterbacks this week. Then, this pick looked really good in the first 6 minutes of the game with Joseph Randall with two really long runs. But he did have an overall good game. 14 carries, over 80 yards, three touchdowns, 30-point week. It looked like it could have been an even bigger week, but he had negative 4 yards rushing in the second half of that game.
Well, the team couldn't run at all in the
second. Then Feig decided to get cute and went with the Jets defense, and that didn't work out so well. Now, their offense didn't help the defense out in this game, which is one of the reasons the Jets only got the team got Jeff 3 points, gave up two touchdowns, over 200 yards in both rushing and passing. But the Philly offense, at least on the ground, woke up a little bit. So the Jets defense turned out to be a poor pick this week for Mr. Fiegel.
Well, and the Jets not as opportunistic as they had been in the previous two games.
Well, so but overall, two out of three, not bad for Fiegel. I like it.
Deserves some credit for that.
I agree.
Can't hammer him too hard.
And that's what happened to DraftKings, Jeff Fiegel's lineup in week three. To draft your own lineup, go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. We're out of time, folks. For Lance Medel, I'm John Schmuck. Thanks so much for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tomorrow it is Deal and Marks. They come your way at noon, but of course, first, make sure you check out Tom Coughlin. Press conference that comes your way live on Giants.com at 11, and then some analysis right afterwards from Paul Dottino and David Deal. For Lance Medel, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a fantastic day.
Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.